back again with the Austins. We're Mike and Lisa. It's your morning tradition here on your, gosh, what day is it, Lisa? Thursday morning.
August 6th.
All right, Magnificat Radio at MagnificatMedia.com. Check back often. We're always doing different things on the site, adding more stuff. Your morning tradition with, we continue with our conversation with Louis Tafari, and from the website Romanitas Press. Did I get it right, Louis? I got it right, didn't I?
No. Romanitas Press.
That's what I'm saying. Romanitas Press.
There you go.
That's exactly how I said it. I don't know.
I'm going to start mispronouncing your radio.
My name?
Mike
Austin. Yeah. I'm Mike Austin to you, buddy.
Right. We can call you Mikael.
Mikael. Yes. Hey, you know, I know on your website there's literally, I don't want to say everything you ever wanted to know about the liturgy, but
a lot.
Boy, oh boy, you have got a lot of information over at Romanitas Press.
Thank you.
I have a specific question that has bothered me for a long time, and I came across your article, and I went, oh, that's perfect. It's, you call it beretiquette, the wearing of the beretta. And so, ladies and gentlemen, this is a snippet of the kind of stuff you find at Romanitas Press, or Louis Tafari can actually consult your chapel if you've got questions about things. But first, the beretta is a conundrum to me. It's a cool-looking hat. I dig the tassel. But beyond that, it's more than just that. So tell me, first of all, a little history behind the beretta.
Okay, well, the word beretta, it actually comes from birus, which is a Latin derivative of the Greek word piros, which was a cone-shaped hat that was colored red, hence the Greek word piros for flame.
Okay.
And so in Latin, they used to call it the pileus. So there's the etymology of where the word beretta, which is an Italian word, comes from. It is derived from the academic headgear worn by lay people, which is today we identify with the modern-day mortarboard.
Okay.
That we see at graduations. Though, if you go to Europe, a lot of the academic headgear looks very much like a beretta.
Interesting.
Probably since about the 14th century that the clergy have actually been wearing them, wearing this specific type of headgear called the beretta. And that should make the distinction that the secular clergy, those who belong to dioceses or secular religious congregations, like you might say like the Jesuits, they'll wear the beretta, but most monastic or mendicant orders won't wear a beretta. They'll wear a hood.
Right.
And during the Mass, actually, they would put their annus, which is that square, that rectangular piece of cloth that's actually like a neck protector. They'll actually put that over their hood, and they'll wear that to the altar and from the altar. There's some exceptions, of course, to all this because it gets pretty complicated. Then the beretta is basically, here, the one that you see in the United States, most common, it has four sides, and then it has three peaks, or sometimes called horns or fins. In fact, in Italian, it's called the tricorno, which is, you know, trihorn hat.
I love it.
There are different versions available in different countries.
Okay.
And then it's surmounted by what's called a tuft or a pom-pom. It's not really actually a tassel.
Yeah, it's a little like a little rabbit tail up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, only it's a lot more, it's more spherical in shape, let's put it that way. And, of course, I don't want to go into all the different colors and the different cloths that are used for designated the rank of the wearer. The beretta has some very specific rules that are attached to it as well. And that could take some time to kind of go through.
Well, let me ask this. The fins, I always like the fins. Now, they're only on three parts of it. There's a question right there. Why not? See, as a person who likes things all balanced out, I like things to even out and balance out. And I look at the beretta. One of the fins is taller than the other two, which bothers me. And then there's one little section where there's no fin at all. So
and it's interesting because, you know, some of the, like if you were to go to Spain, for instance, the typical beretta there is actually a four it's actually just there's four horns, and they're not even fins. They just kind of come up to a point on each corner.
Huh.
So who knows why they decided to do what? The three fins certainly makes it easier because then you always know, especially if you're like the master of ceremonies or you're one of the sacred ministers like the deacon, you always know which fin to give it to the celebrant so he can put it on his head.
Okay.
There's an interesting symbolism I've heard that's attributed to the Beretta. Of course, this isn't the reason why it is like that, but you can think of it that the four sides of the Beretta represents the four Gospels, whereas the three fins represent the three theological virtues.
I like that a lot.
And so it's kind of a catechism in itself, you might say.
I love that. Well, but isn't that true though? There's so much stuff in our Roman rite in the Catholic liturgy that there's little tiny catechisms. They're like little symbolic little catechisms, and they remind us all if we think about them that way.
Well, first you have to know about it, and then you can think about it.
Then you can think about it, right? So, okay, so this has bothered me for a long time. When I came from the Novus Ordo to tradition, it seemed like everybody, all of the priests, wore the Beretta. Father Peter Scott, one of the first priests I was introduced to, he always wore the Beretta. And I thought, that is so cool. They got that thing on. And I used to call it the hat. They said, no, it's the Beretta. Okay, there's a Beretta. This is great. And then suddenly it seemed nobody wore the Beretta. And I said, I like the Beretta. Where's your Beretta? and then we had an opportunity because of a visiting family. We ended up going every now and then. We would go to a Christ the King indult mass. And they were wearing the Beretta all the time. And I'm going, that looks good on you. So Beretta on or Beretta off? What is it, Lewis?
Well, I'll tell you. So you're speaking specifically concerning the Society of St. Pius X. Before I can start with the specifics for that, first we need to understand, and this is often misunderstood or just plain unknown. It's an ignorance that in the 1962 Missale Romanum, in its missal rubrics, a section called the Ritus Servandus, which is basically explains the manner in which the celebrant offers Mass.
Yeah.
J.B. O'Connell, in that book I told you about before previously called The Celebration of Mass,
right.
He comments while describing how the celebrant goes to the altar to offer low Mass that the missal rubrics of the 1962 edition no longer oblige the celebrant to wear a Beretta, though it is, quote, becoming to do so, unquote, or in Latin, convenientur caput tegit. So it's no longer, before 1962, it was of obligation for the celebrant to go to the altar with his head covered and to leave the altar with his head covered. But as of the 1962 missal rubric, that's no longer strictly required. So first thing people need to understand is don't get your scapular in a knot over this, because it's not one of these things that's going to invalidate the Mass or even make it illicit, all right?
Because, Lewis, didn't Archbishop Lefebvre even say that the 1962 missal was fine?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we can address that subject in our time. And that's just one of those little rubrical changes because, with things as they go. The reason for it specifically in the Society of St. Pius X was the Superior General in the 1980s, Father Franz Schmidberger, realized there was a problem going on in a few of our seminaries where the seminarians were more concerned about when they should wear the Beretta than their priestly formation.
Uh-huh.
And this also included the issue of wearing lace surplices in choir. In a decision that really exemplified the spirit of the founder of the Society of St. Pius X, Archbishop Lefebvre, which really more the Society's spirit is to focus on the supernatural formation of priests, and in doing so, it also imitates the simplicity and humility of its founder, Archbishop Lefebvre. So, in fact, that's why, if you notice, it wasn't done just for practical reasons, but just to kind of keep low-key. Archbishop Lefebvre, you see, he never wore, like, the Magna Cappa. The Cappa Magna, which is, that giant, long, red silk cape that you see a lot of cardinals and bishops wearing now. He could have worn it. He just didn't do so. you know, and then the other thing, too, that people need to understand is the Beretta does not make the cleric.
Correct.
So this was really important for the formation in the seminaries, so the seminarians were concentrating on what was most important.
Yeah, you can look the part, but it doesn't mean that you have the part.
Right.
Right. Now, that being said, in our own chapels, the priest, if he chooses to use the Beretta or not, may do so. Some of our priests choose to do so. In fact, it's funny how some priests will choose to do it at every Mass. Some priests will only choose to do it at high Mass. And some priests just say, I'm not used to doing it. I'm not going to do it at all. So, in fact, when I get to MC over here at St. Vincent's, and we have like a solemn Mass, and I know there's one priest who does like to wear the Beretta, I like to ask the question to the sacred ministers, do you want to wear the holy hat? And they kind of look, and they're like, do we want to? Do we not want to? And sometimes the answer is yes, and they'll all try one on, and they'll wear it. And then sometimes they'll be like, let's just not deal with it.
The holy hat.
That's
pretty funny. I like it. I just have to say, now having never worn one and not going to wear one, I mean,
you can buy one if you want to from a Catholic religious supply company, Mike, if it makes you feel better.
No, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to be out mowing my lawn in a Beretta. Not going to happen. But they're cool, and I like the ceremony. See, I'm a French guy. I like the ceremony. I like when the Berettas and the kissing of the hand and the cap, you know, the Beretta, and then they put it on. I just love all of that. So, I don't know, I'm just saying. The Beretta should be on. There. I have said it. All right. Hey, listen, we're running a little short here. We're going to get going. Lewis, as always, a wealth of information and knowledge. Ladies and gentlemen, do yourself a favor. Find some time when you're alone or early Saturday morning or sometime. Maybe use some of your... No, don't use your boss's time. That would be bad.
I did not endorse that.
No.
This is a disclaimer from Romanitas Press.
There you go. Go to RomanitasPress.com. That's RomanitasPress.com. RomanitasPress.com. And we're going to check in with you probably. Let's try and do this once a week because there's a lot we could go through. Like, for instance, maybe next week, the Sanctus, standing or kneeling. How about that one?
Yes, that would be a good one.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody talks about that.
Lewis, have a great day, man. I appreciate you taking your time.
Thank you, Mike and Lisa.
Thank you.
And I'm
going to
use your...
Again.
I'm also going to use your line, don't get your scapular in a knot. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I like that. See you later. Have a good day.
Right, God bless. Bye-bye.
I like that guy.
He is great.
And a wealth of knowledge. I don't know if... I know he likes to goof around with us, but the guy is an encyclopedia.
Yes.
So we're going to try.
Extremely smart.
I think do this every week, and I think we're going to try and develop a show just with him in mind, like a liturgical thing.
Yeah, and the detail that he knows.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. It goes to detail, then more detail.
We just got to figure out. How to get him to Well, I think what he's going to do, we're going to set him up with a microphone in his, in his closet or something. Something will get him going. Mike and Lisa Austin, we're going to do this and get back here and finish out this morning's Your Morning Tradition. Thursday morning, August the 6th.
Dun, 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 dun.
Magnificat Radio at MagnificatMedia.com. Your Morning Tradition. We are
living our faith. Magnificat Radio is available locally anywhere you are, through the internet, worldwide. If this is important to you, to have Magnificat Radio available in your life, then your tax-deductible contribution will help sustain it and keep Magnificat Media, Magnificat Radio, going. Thank you for listening to and supporting Magnificat Radio.
And welcome back to Your Morning Tradition here on MagnificatMedia.com. It's Magnificat Radio. The Austins, Mike and Lisa.
Hello.
Put a little cork in the bottle of Thursday morning as we get ready to put this baby back on the shelf and away we go. You're turning pages. What are you looking at over there?
Just trying to find my spot.
Okay. We thank Lewis Tafari for being our guest this morning. And we're going to hear a lot more from him. Like I said, we're working on trying to be able to give him his own show. sometime later in the day or midday, something like that, where he talks liturgy, you know, and rubrics and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's an expert, after all. Earlier on today, when we did This Day in History, we talked about today being not just the Feast of the Transfiguration, but it's also the anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bomb
right.
on Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa, you made mention of that article that you had seen,
right?
I guess years ago, about the Jesuit fathers. In,
correct.
Is it Nagasaki or Hiroshima?
I thought it was Hiroshima.
Right.
I thought it was right there at the epicenter. I mean, right there on
right.
the spot.
And Hiroshima was the first one, I think, and then came mm-hmm. Nagasaki. But anyway, well, let's pull up this article. I don't know where this came from. This is from, let me just go roll back, something from the Catholic Exchange, but I think it's reprinted even then. This is a story that goes way back to that day, and the story, well, I'll just read it.
Yeah, go right
oh,
ahead.
Okay. Father Hubert Schiffer, a German Jesuit, was one of the survivors. He was 30 years old at the time of the explosion, and he lived to the age of 63 in pretty good health. And in later years, he traveled to speak about the experience he had. And so his testimony was written down in 1976. And well, we'll just go on with it, with his story. Since Hiroshima had military facilities, he assumed there must have been some sort of explosion at the harbor when the flash of light happened.
Correct.
On August the 6th, 1945.
That's what he thought.
After saying Mass, he just sat down to breakfast, and there was the flash of light.
Mm-hmm.
And he assumed that there was an explosion at the harbor. Must immediately, he recounts this, he says, a terrific explosion filled the air with a bursting thunderstroke. An invisible force lifted me from my chair, hurled me through the air, shook me, battered me, whirled me around. He raised himself from the ground, looked around, and could see nothing in any direction. Everything had been devastated. He had quite a few minor injuries. Now, you're talking about where they lived was within a mile of Ground Zero.
Correct.
The atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Dropping.
Where everybody else was just incinerated.
Virtually on his head, the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Okay. He had quite a few minor injuries, but nothing serious. And indeed, later examinations at the hands of the Army doctors, the American Army doctors and scientists showed that neither he nor his companions had suffered ill effects from radiation damage or the bomb. These are the other Jesuit priests.
Mm-hmm.
Along with his fellow Jesuits, Father Schiffer believed, quote, we survived because we were living the message of Fatima. We lived and prayed the rosary daily in that home. After the first bombing, the Japanese government refused to surrender unconditionally, and then we all know that Nagasaki was bombed as well. It says, in a strange parallel to what happened at Hiroshima, the Franciscan friary established by St. Maximilian Kolbe in Nagasaki before the war was likewise unaffected by the bomb which fell there.
See?
Let's see.
God does exist.
St. Maximilian, who was well known for his devotion to the Blessed Virgin, had decided to go against the advice he had been given to build his friary in a certain location. When the bomb was dropped, the friary was protected from the force of the bomb by an intervening mountain. So both at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we can see Mary's protective hand at work. The apparitions at Fatima in Portugal took place in 1917, and it goes on.
Right. And I wish more outlets would talk about that story just as much as they talk about the devastation
mm-hmm.
of what happened to the people.
I like this
because
at the end.
It's an important story.
They wrap this up by saying it's interesting to reflect on the theme of the Transfiguration, linking these various events. Christ's face shone like the sun on Mount Tabor and at Fatima. Our Lady worked the great miracle of the sun to convince the huge crowd which had gathered there of her message. And she was giving to mankind was authentic. Consider, too, that the poor people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki suffered as man-made, quote-unquote, suns exploded in their midst, the bombs.
Right.
Right. Creating devastation. But at Hiroshima, the eight Jesuits who were living the message of Fatima, particularly the daily rosary
And it says they were somehow transfigured, protected by God's divine power from the terrible effects of that bomb. Surely there is a message here for all of us.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
And I was reading an article about the bombers, and one of them says, he says, no joy at that point, but it was a job that was done.
Mm.
So, I mean, they didn't take pleasure in
it. No, of course not.
They just knew that it was a job that had to be done. And
the reason that they gave always, from what I remember, of using this, they knew this was what this was going to do. They knew this.
I don't even think the men that were on that plane knew it until they just figured it out while they were on the plane.
I think you're right, yeah. But the scientists knew.
Well, they knew, yeah.
But the thing is they decided, if we invade Japan, these guys are going to fight to the death. We're going to lose so many lives, American lives. We've got to end this. And so they dropped it, and it did. It ended the war in Japan. And I don't know if they were ever going to use it in Europe, but they didn't have to because Hitler self-destructed anyway. But
yeah,
interesting story though, and I think it's one to ponder today: the Feast of the Transfiguration and the anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bomb.
Right.
We are Mike and Lisa Austin, and that's going to do it for us today. Thanks for being part of our day. Thanks for letting us get involved in starting your day, or if you're listening to this at the end of the day and
closing it out.
The afternoon replay. Thanks for being part of our day, and glad we could be there for, the end of it. Well, we end the work week tomorrow.
Ooh, yes,
it's a brand new day, and we'll get you into the weekend. Well, join us tomorrow morning, we hope. And in the meantime, God bless. Have a great day, and enjoy yourself, and do what you can to keep your head above. How about that?
Yes, that's fine.
We are your morning tradition, Magnificat Media, Magnificat Radio, where we are
living our faith.